Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, got the pleasure of being joined by JP Curto. Hi, JP.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Good, good. Good to have you here with us. We got connected through Green Angel Syndicate, or now called Green Angel Ventures. I've been a member, active member, and you've been a venture that's been through being invested by Green Angel Syndicate. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, great. So what I'd like to talk with you today is the journey of being an entrepreneur, really. You've been through one venture. You're onto another one on that now, but I think that whole journey of being an entrepreneur and starting a venture and exiting. So it'd be great to get that story if you could kick off an introduction to yourself.
Yes, absolutely, Andrew. So thank you very much for having me today. Very, very exciting. So I've been life as an entrepreneur, but before that, I was on the corporate side. So I used to work for companies like BP, Shell, EDF Man. I was at Shell Gas when it got bought by Ørsted, and that was my first introduction to renewables. And I've been going through various different commodities, from sugar and coffee to natural gas, electricity, renewables, et cetera, so all in the physical commodity side. And then I decided to leave the corporate world and venture into the unknown, into the startup world. So my first venture, or my first company, was a consultancy. So while I was at Ørsted, I got introduced into power purchase agreements. And at the time, it was only Google and Amazon, perhaps maybe even Microsoft, signing these deals. And we're talking about probably 13 years ago. Right. And I found the concept fascinating, and I decided to, you know, venture into starting a small boutique consultancy that basically allowed smaller companies to access power purchase agreements, you know, in the same way that your Googles and Microsoft were accessing them. Because I thought, you know, this is a very impactful way to actually, you know, deploy fossil fuels and turn them into green electrons and build new assets. You know, the helping to build new assets was something that really, really attracted me. So my first venture I built with no investment. I didn't even know that I could really get any investment.
So just to explain for ones who don't know, and I don't know really, so what's a purchasing power agreement? Why would these large companies or smaller companies want to buy through some sort of agreement as opposed to just going to their local power provider and say, just give me your electricity or sell me at the cheapest price? What are they purchasing that's different that you were advising on?
That's a really, really good question. So a power purchase agreement itself is a very long-term contract. It's essentially a contract between yourself as a corporate and the generator directly, so the company that builds these wind and solar farms. And you commit to offtake the energy from that specific project over a period of time. So probably 12 to 15 years is now the standard term. And the impactful thing about power purchase agreements is that you allow the developer to get the necessary finance to build the asset, right? So, right. You know, the developer goes to the bank and says, you know, I've got this off-taker, lend me the money to build the asset. And directly you are deploying fossil fuels and replacing them with a brand new project to your name, essentially. And that's really impactful. And you as a corporate, that's the kind of gold standard at the moment. So if you sign up to an initiative like RE100 or CDP and you set up your targets via that initiative, then the power purchase agreement is like the gold standard, because you're actually supporting the development of new assets, And that's super impactful.
Yeah, no, that's really important, isn't it? Because we're seeing now with climate impact and getting to net zero and ESG stuff, we're seeing that it could be pretty murky in terms of saying, oh yeah, I'm going to offset, but there's maybe no extra capacity built, and there's also there could be other stuff of that happening and that within that space. And as you said, that direct link between a company contracting and some new infrastructure put in place is so important.
Yes, it's so important, but it's also very, very hard.
Yeah.
Because it's quite a chunky contract, so you need to have quite a lot of volume. You need to have amazing credit rating to be, as a company, to be attractive to these developers, because when they present the business case to the bank, they need to make sure that you as a company will exist for the next 15 years or 16, 20 years, right?
Okay.
So that's why I built my first startup, and even my second startup, Zygo, was strongly focused on democratizing access to renewables via these power purchase agreements.
Great. Okay. So Zygo now, then you mentioned that's the business that was your second or third iteration of getting into this from consultancy into the other bits. How did it then come together to you to realize that this is an investable business? And how did you go about getting investors and scaling?
The reason I realized this was a scalable business was on scalability, basically. So when I was when I sold my first consultancy to Southpole Group, we run a couple of tenders for some companies like Virgin Media, and on the back of that tender, we got quite a lot of projects. Right, so basically, developers at the time when demand wasn't that high were coming to us and saying, these projects are not suitable for Virgin Media, but these are amazing projects. Can you help us market these projects and find a good off-taker? And we ended up with around 50 projects. And we were like, you know what? This is great. This is something that actually needs to happen. And corporates need to know about this project. And, we need to promote this project. So that was the first iteration of Zygo, was essentially a marketplace where we promoted these projects with corporates in a digital way. So we thought about initially to send a newsletter to say, these are the latest projects. But then we thought, actually, it's not just the realizing that the project exists, is actually going through the tendering process, understanding what are the requirements to contract energy from this wind farm or solar farm. It's all the risks involved, or the contract and all the stuff that, comes with it. Actually, maybe we can simplify this by making it digital.
Right. Okay. No, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I think actually you're sparking something here with me now, in that what I've been saying for quite a few years, that we've got to think about new value chains. We've got to think about new business processes when we're doing some of these things. And this is not just, it's not just changing the power station or the power source. What you've talked about there is you realize with the engagement that you needed to change the process, and you needed a platform to be able sort of to do this. And it's changing that business model. It's not just about changing to a solar farm. As you said, there's a whole bits you've got to get right with, the finance and the process and connecting the right partners and that. Okay, now good. That's good insight.
Yeah, correct. And it's all about democratizing access, because at the time there was a few power purchase agreements being signed by Amazon and Google, and these guys have big teams, right, that can look at the legal side. They understand power, they understand markets, they understand hedging, they understand virtual PPAs, they understand all these concepts that perhaps 80% or 90% of the rest of the companies don't, right? So it's all about simplifying the model and simplifying the concept and making it a lot more accessible so that companies feel comfortable going through the process themselves.
Okay, so in the go back to the early days of Zygo then, when you've now got these potential customers, you've got the idea of the process. How did you go about getting investors? Like, Green Angel Syndicate Angels and the others who were in the early days of your business?
Well, by bringing, so the first venture that got interested in us is Sustainable Ventures, and they have this great accelerator where, you know, they support companies from understanding the environment, understanding the market, the total addressable market, in, you know, all these terms that come with investing. And they invest in really, really early stages, really early stage companies. So I essentially went through the accelerator, and they knew Green Angel Syndicate, and they introduced me to Green Angel Syndicate, Simon at the time, and we got on really well, and they co-invest quite a lot with their ventures. So that was the first ticket. So we went through the accelerator, and we got investment from Green Angel Syndicate and Sustainable right. Ventures. And then through the program, they prepare you to go through the next rounds, and they look at your pitch, they look at your finance projections, you know, the whole package. And that was really, really helpful, because at the time, that was my kind of first real investment venture, investment-backed venture. So it was great to bring a little bit more structure to my pitch and to, you know, the what problem we were solving and all the yeah. stuff that comes with that.
And yeah, and was Andrew Wordsworth one of your key contacts?
Andrew, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I've known Andrew for many years, and Sustainable Ventures and that as well. I've really admire and recommend them to others who are looking at you know, sustainability and climate sort of change. Side. And I know that they've worked well with Green Angel Syndicate and that as well. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good example of synergy there within that ecosystem, which is excellent. So the journey of the entrepreneur, you had the idea, you got some early sales, you saw the market sort of fit, you got your early angel investments. About when, what sort of timing was that now? In the what year was that you sort of were coming out of the accelerator and getting that early angel investment for Zyga?
That was around 2020, 2021.
Okay.
So we just raised our pre-seed, and seed round. We were actually raising a seed extension, and then obviously COVID hit. So yeah. that was a very interesting time where, you know, we like changed the status quo completely. We were really worried about the round and investment, and, you know, all the VCs were actually worried about their portfolio and making that ensuring the survival of their own portfolios. We were lucky enough to raise capital through that as well, because there were a few government-backed initiatives that support the startups, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right.
Yeah, but that was a very challenging time for us, for sure. Basically, the team went from being a very close team in the office 7 days a week to being completely remote. We were figuring out, you know, how to accelerate the growth of the company whilst figuring out how to survive COVID and make sure that we were hearing all these stories about, you know, a lot of companies failing. And yeah, it was a very interesting time. But then that basically made the whole focus of renewables like a lot more, you know, in the front pages of everything, right? Yeah. So there was like there was this initiative called Build Back Greener, and everyone just had a little bit of time to think about, you know, their footprint and how they can be more, you know, focused on being sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. So that eventually helped us a lot. The markets were a little bit fragile at the time, but yeah, we managed to come fine on the other side.
And in terms of the growth and that of the business, because I can see what you're doing now, you know, what you built up with the sort of platform could be quite disruptive and that for the industry, or you're providing something new that, I said, the incumbents, you know, back to my first example of if I was a corporate, I'd just go to my electricity provider and I'd try and find the cheapest. And you're providing something quite different now. So how was that dynamic maybe starting to work with some of the incumbents as partners or competitors or sort of stuff like that? And how are you seeing how was that playing out?
It was very, very interesting. So in terms of incumbents and competitors, there was this company in the US called Level 10, which their business model was very, very similar to ours. They were kind of digitizing PPAs and making sure that more companies had access. And then we realized that they were actually interested in the European market. So that actually was an opportunity for us to accelerate even further, right? Because we knew that there was competition in the market. We knew that in terms of demand was growing significantly.
Yeah.
More and more companies were actually joining these initiatives like RE100 and CDP and getting to understand a little bit more about PPAs and the impact and this gold standard that we talk about. So it was a very interesting time because demand went from us trying to pitch the concept from scratch and two different concepts. So we were pitching the concept of power purchase agreements and its complexities and, how the, in terms of impact. And the second pitch was our platform, right? So, we're not just pitching the concept of PPAs, but also pitching our platform, which simplifies PPAs and makes that a lot more easier to access and understand the market and that kind of stuff. So
right.
It was quite an interesting time for sure.
And certainly, I suppose as an entrepreneur, sometimes and you get them pitched to angels, oh, we're the only one, and sort of stuff like that. The having a competitor coming into the market actually validates the market, doesn't it? And helps to get the whole concept and that sort of moving along. So I think that's an important message to entrepreneurs and that out there as well, that if you're the only one, then that's maybe not such a good idea for investors or for the market as well. So that's good. So in terms of your journey, then your exit journey, because I think it's great to listen to an entrepreneur that's then gone through the full gambit of, as you said, you're starting the idea and then getting your seed and growing. So how did the exit come about and the process of doing that as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so we were raising our Series A and looking for investors and looking to grow the company. We had the plans. And then we got approached by Schneider Electric. And they were very clear from the very beginning. They were like, we're not interested in investing. We're interested in acquiring, which to me at that stage was quite an attractive option because as an entrepreneur, you want impact, right? Especially with an impact driven company, and you want that accelerant. You want that company that will potentially, or that investor that will potentially come and change things and take it to the next level and take your idea to the next level, and not just the idea, but actually like the general concept. And that was something that Schneider was proposing. They did exactly what we were doing, but in a non-digital way, right? And they had a really, really strong focus on digitization and innovation. And we were an attractive option for them because we had that digital platform that was actually built, and we had clients going through it, and we had developers, and we had projects, and we had transactions. So for them, it was quite an exciting opportunity. And for me and the team was a very exciting option as well, because all of a sudden, Zygote could be expanded into different countries, and the idea could be accelerated and that kind of stuff, which is exactly what they're doing now.
Excellent. I think that's a good example. I think from, say, my experience over 20 years now, I've been working with large corporates and their corporate venture units and being an advocate to corporate, saying, look, these technologies are going to come, they're going to change. You need to embrace them. You need to change your business models to have impact, whether that's impact on climate, whether that's impact on health, whether that's impact in doing, you know, good things for the planet and making money at the same time. I think you can't just be, oh, yeah, we're going to save the planet, but we haven't got a business model. So I think that's important. But getting corporates to understand that they, when they engage with startups, either by doing investing as corporate venturing so they get to learn and change their processes, or as you're talking about here in Schneider Electric, recognizing what you're doing and acquiring, you know, your know-how, I think that's great. You know, and I think you're right to put that, you rightly put it there. There's the software, there's the processes, there's the customers, there's the team and sort of stuff like that. Because often people think, well, couldn't Schneider just get some coders and create the software? And it's not that, isn't it? What they were acquiring with you was broader than that. Is that fair?
Yeah, exactly. And this comes down to the whole landscape of startups and investment and acquisitions right now. So it's not just the idea, and it's not just the execution. It's kind of the whole package. So there's a lot of innovation out there. There's a lot of, you know, great startups doing great stuff. And they always, you as a startup will always build your venture with exit in mind, right? So how can you grow this, and how can it be useful to other companies, and how other companies can benefit from your idea, right? And it'll be like, obviously you have two types of startups, ones that you grow and you want to continue growing and become one of these big corporates. Others, you basically focus on a niche, focus on a problem, and then basically like look for an exit and try to solve that problem further for a corporate that can actually accelerate your development. And obviously there's other types of ventures, but those two are the main ones that we see right now.
No, that's an excellent analogy. I think you've represented that really well, because my next question was going to be around really, well, why didn't you want to keep this going and grow it yourself and sort of stuff like that? And I speak to so many entrepreneurs because I angel invest in a number of places and sort of stuff like that. And you do get entrepreneurs who say, no, I'm going to keep growing this business. I'm going, no, the business model isn't right. You know, as you're saying, you know, this is the place you can have more impact by it being taken by a brand, be it by an operational, by a global business where this thing can grow and have impact, as you're saying. So you didn't feel that, oh, I'm going to keep hold of Zygo and I'm going to grow it into the biggest platform or anything like that? Or was there tension for you or some of the team members or some of the investors to say, no, it's too soon? Was there any view on that?
Not at all, because we fell into the second category of venture that I explained. Basically, and this is quite interesting because, you know, you as a founder, when you set up your startup, you have basically, you want to eat the world with one bite, right? You just want to do everything. You know, you think your startup can grow to magnificent proportions and, you know, solve every problem possible. So one of my challenges was the pitching right at the beginning, right? Because we wanted to, whenever we spoke to a prospect and they were like, oh, can you do this as well? We were like, oh yeah, of course we can do that as well. And then my first pitches were like, oh, actually we can do this and we can do that as well. And we do a little bit of this and there's some subscription for this and there's this other thing for that. And it just created confusion, and, you know, until we actually decided, you know, actually, guys, we are a tendering platform for PPAs. That's it. That's what we're a tendering engine, and companies will come in here, and the value proposition is we will run a tender for them and show them the best possible projects for them to sign a PPA with. And that's it. That's what we are, right? That was a time when we actually started growing. The whole team was focusing on one thing rather than 10. And then we started gaining a lot of traction because our value proposition was very clear. You know, it's like, this is what we do, this is what you're going to get, these are the deliverables. And that concept and that platform fit really well into Schneider, for example, right? Because it was part of a bigger picture and a bigger infrastructure, and Schneider could accelerate the platform and the company and et cetera, et cetera, with their current infrastructure, right? It wasn't for us to try to become the world's biggest tendering platform in the world. So in that respect, it worked really well. For other startups and other founders, they look things differently, right? So they want to, you know, gain control and cover a specific market and a specific market segment. For us, it was very natural that, you know, Schneider was the accelerant of what we were doing.
Excellent. Great. So you had your successful exit from that and for the investors and that. So what are you moving on to now as a serial entrepreneur?
So now, again, in the spirit of bringing transparency and to bringing a lot more visibility into the renewables market, now we're focusing on the certificate side, right? So basically, you as a developer, when you build a wind and solar farm, for every megawatt of power produced, you have to produce a certificate that basically says, you know, I can confirm that the power, this megawatt of power came from this wind farm or this solar farm, right? And it's up to you if you want to sell those certificates bundled with the energy, so as part of a package, or unbundle, because the certificates market is growing quite considerably and demand for certificates is growing. It's similar to offsets. So, for example, if you're a company that signed a PPA for, I don't know, 40% of your volume and you have remaining 60%, then it's quite challenging to find solutions for to actually trace back the energy to a specific wind and solar farm and basically like fit those energy certificates on an hourly basis to the times where you're actually consuming the power.
Right.
So, you know, transparency is a big problem in the certificates market, and that's something we want to solve with renewable.
Great. And what stage are you at with renewable in terms of your growth and investment and the key sort of metrics there for a startup?
So we just closed our pre-seed round with some great investors. And now I have a co-founder, so a guy called Nick that used to be the CEO of a company called WePower. And between us, we have a lot of experience within the renewables market, building platforms, understanding the traceability aspect using blockchain, and basically the compliance bit with initiatives like CDP and RE100. So now we're in the process of building the platform, understanding the user experience, who are the key players, what are the key needs in the market, and basically try and solve those issues.
Excellent. JP, I think it's been fascinating talking with you, getting the full story around an entrepreneur, going through all your early stages, understanding how you get your first customers. And I think that story of the empowering your team and you into the bigger parent, I think is a great part of your story. So wish you every
success in
the next venture. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Please do like and subscribe to future interviews.